Welcome to Comical Start After Dark.
After dark. Oh, is it dark there now?
Well, it is funny because it is daylight saving, so actually it's not quite dark out yet.
Oh.
But two things have transpired. I just sent you a picture through Skype.
I see.
Of what I did to Google Docs just now. And the reason I did this to Google Docs, which is apply a dark mode theme to it via a Firefox extension, is that currently all the lights are off in the bedroom. Because before I came in here to record, Erin was in here just chilling out reading.
Sleeping.
No.
Oh.
She was in here reading, but she had the lights off at that time with the window open. Now the window's still open, but it is darker, so now it's just dark in the bedroom because I haven't bothered turning on the lights.
Okay.
So instead of making my eyes blinded by Google Docs, I decided to keep the lights off and change what Google Docs looks like. That being said, I am still going to have my retinas burned whenever I move over to Go Comics, but that's a problem for a later day, or for a later part of this hour.
Yeah. Is that the purpose of dark mode?
I think that dark mode, other than it looking cool aesthetically to certain people, such as myself, I do think that part of the point of dark mode is to have fewer bright white UI elements. Some people just find it more comfortable to read light text on a dark background.
Mm-hmm.
It does also look cool, I think. And there is a certain practical purpose you could argue on your device to run dark mode if you're doing a lot of like reading web pages or whatever, because pushing out black or like darker light is less energy required of your display.
Doesn't it depend on the type of display?
To a certain extent, but I think it's probably true that every display would need less energy to run more dark UI elements.
Okay.
Because I think to get white, regardless, you still have to kind of like push everything through. But I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if it's OLED, that's obviously true. And these days, most phones are OLED or OLED adjacent technologies for their screens. Laptops, maybe it's less of a big deal. I haven't done independent testing of this fact, but I don't know. And I don't actually like how this Google Docs dark theme looks necessarily. The extension that I arbitrarily picked at a moment's notice only has so many options, but it gets the job done. It's doing what I wanted to do.
It does choose my least favorite color for anything, really.
Not an orange guy?
Is that orange or is it like kind of yellow adjacent?
That's a good question. I'm no color person, unlike you. To me, it looks orange on my screen, but that...
I'm also making it bigger and it looks more orange now.
Okay. Yeah, it does have that like somewhere between like what color is certain kinds of like gold and brass and stuff like that, you know, where do you move from like more yellow to more like orangey, you know?
Yeah,
orange brown. That's a real messy line for me and my color understanding. To me, this looks orange, even if it's not like, you know, hunting vest orange. I would still call it orange, but I could imagine someone looking at this and being like, oh yeah, that's like a dark yellow, and I wouldn't be mad at them about that.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand where you're
like
coming from.
Goldenrod or something, or
that's exactly what they would call it.
Or like like pollen or something.
Yeah, because like it's obviously not the color of my very orange water bottle or other very orange things that I have around, but to me I would just call it orange, but that doesn't mean it is.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I think it is orange technically is because the setting I have for this extension, it's essentially trying to invert every color. And since a link is normally blue, the opposite of blue on the color wheel is orange, which makes me imagine that it's more likely to be orangish than it is to be yellowish.
Mm-hmm.
That's my rough argument for that.
Let's avoid getting deeper into color science because I have so many things I really want to talk about now that you've brought this up. And I also know they're not the type of things that are ideal for an audio medium.
Yeah, that's fair.
hey, if you're a listener and you want to know and you know us well enough that this isn't a parasocial experience, reach out and we'll talk about it.
Having a discussion about colors is not even like ideal visually. Like, it's just talking about colors sucks.
Yeah. Can confirm.
That's what I've learned in life.
Retweet. Colors. Talking about colors sucks. But I will talk about colors for one more short moment here.
Okay.
Your comment on orange versus yellow reminded me of, I was watching a YouTube video about, okay, yellow laser pointers are difficult to make because of science reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And so someone like talking about yellow laser pointers, and they'd like ordered two, hopefully yellow laser pointers to add to their collection because this person apparently collects laser pointers, which we're not going to judge them about. We got weird hobbies. But it spurred on a whole video that was essentially a discussion of like colors and what a color names mean. And like, because they would like, they got the laser pointers and they're like, these are in like a yellow part of the spectrum. And like, they use the spectrometer and they're like, this is the wavelength. That is like kind, like this computer says that color should be yellow, but it don't be looking yellow on the wall. sure. And so then they like took a series of cards of, well, it wasn't cards, it was like images on a computer screen. And again, there's flaws because color correction, whatever, on monitors. But they like moved through them sequentially, each of them with a number. And we were like, hey, when you watch this, like when you see it in your mind, the first card that is yellow, like choose which, like remember that number. And then they display them all at the end. And it was amazing every time they did it, how like the one that in my mind looked yellow first, when I saw it on its own in the sequence, then when you put them all together on one screen at once, it looks totally different. It's so different. Like, yeah. I would never agree with myself after seeing them all together.
Yep.
And it was just, I don't know. Colors are weird, dude.
They're messy. We'd just be best without them.
Yeah. Dog's life, dude. Rough, rough.
So, speaking of yellow and orange things.
Oh, God.
I'm not going to discuss too much why I was in this position, but short version, this weekend, Friday evening, I was hanging out with Max, okay? And it was his birthday last week, and his family was coming over. We're gonna have pizza, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they come over with some pizza that they'd picked up, and we were waiting for his brother to show up. So we were like, yeah, let's throw the pizza in the oven to just keep it warm or whatever. Max sets the oven to like 250. They throw these pizza boxes in there. And then probably fewer than 5 minutes. Well, yeah, 5 minutes later. Who knows? Max opens up the oven and it's like, oh, wow. And like closes the oven because a big billow of smoke came out.
Yeah.
Right? So then he opens it back up, and the top pizza box had been placed too close to the heating element and was completely on fire.
Oh!
And so...
Oh! So it...
So Max's first inclination is to close the oven again, to which his dad comes over and is like, no, take it, like, open it up. And he like, his dad very carefully, like, from, you know, the edge of the like the opposite sides of the pizza box, is able to like pull it out quickly, kind of toss it over to the sink and like bat down the fire with a kitchen towel or whatever. Yeah, so that was really exciting, and the entire middle of the cardboard box was like burned. Somehow most of it didn't quite burn all the way through, so that there was ash all over the pizza or anything.
That's good.
There was just a little bit on that pizza, but that was an extremely funny and dangerous, but in hindsight also funny event that happened. I thought you might enjoy hearing about.
You were correct with that assessment, Mark. That was quite entertaining. I don't know. I'm okay. I'm not trying to, I shouldn't obsess over or like too far dissect whether Max's choices here were good or not.
I'm happy to tell you that what happened was there were four pizza boxes. The way that the oven was set up.
You put four in there?
They put like three stacked on top of each other on one rack. And then they had two racks sitting in there. And there was only room for three. Well, obviously not actually room for three, but physically there was room for three, if not, you know, actually room for three. But physically they put three in the top part, and then there was space for one more in, like, the bottom rack.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy to report that that any one of us could have realized that this was a bad idea, because the clearance between the top box and the heating element was, like, I will generously give it an inch. It was probably less than an inch.
Mm-hmm.
Any one of us could have been capable of looking at what was happening and saying, maybe that's not the best idea as is. But no one spoke up, and we got a fun little smoked out living room for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. I'm almost surprised. I don't know how ovens work, first of all. I'm a little bit of an idiot.
So the way that, like, Max said it.
Is there a top and a bottom element?
There's a top heating element and a bottom heating element.
I typically assume that it's mostly the bottom one running.
It's both. I think it's the top is, like, the broil setting is just the top.
But and every otherwise other time it's both. It's both? Interesting.
As far as I know. And, of course, the thing, well, not necessarily of course, but my understanding and Max's understanding is that most ovens, it's like if you turn the oven on, the heating element is just turned on, and then it just cycles to try and maintain the temperature, right?
Yep, I'm aware
so
of that.
Whatever that oven's heating element is, which I'm sure is well over 500 degrees, was within an inch of this pizza box for over 5 minutes. So, surprise, surprise, it combusted. It was just funny. The thing that we did get to teach Max as a result is his initial reaction was to close the oven. Because in his mind, what he was doing is what you do for a, like, small stovetop fire where you try to smother it.
Yeah. But the I don't hate that idea.
But an oven is not, like, overly airtight in any meaningful way.
But,
like, I understand what he was thinking. I don't begrudge him that initial reaction, because also it's like, oh, there's a fire. Let me put, like, this door in between me and the fire. And also part of his brain was also thinking, I'm sure, like, eventually it'll run out of oxygen. But A, I don't think it will. And B, either way, an oven is, like, a much bigger space, you know? Mm-hmm. And a lot could still happen in that oven before the fire goes out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think my biggest argument for team shut the door initially is, like, in my mind, an oven is a place where things get hot. If there's anywhere in my kitchen I want there to be a fire, it's in the oven, so I can figure out how to actually deal with it properly in the few seconds of thinking I have before I actually enact another plan, rather than, like, have door wide open, plenty of oxygen, fire can get out easily, while I panic and everyone around me panics.
That's fair. I think that, given the situation, who was around, like, Max's first response was not fatal, you know, but his dad was very much like, the fire's not big. Like, he felt comfortable being able to just, like, take it out. And I think there's also a difference, like, where is the fire? Last New Year's Eve, not, so 2022 to 2023, New Year's Eve, I probably told you this story. We were making pizza at Aaron's parents' house, and the crust, we, like, tried to par-bake crusts, and then, like, homemade crusts, and then put it together and then finish baking it all. Well, one of the par-baked crusts, the middle ended up too thin, and we didn't realize that. So it all collapsed in on itself, creating a pizza donut.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue with a pizza donut is that if you don't have a super solid pan for all of that to land onto, it all ends up at the bottom of an oven and on fire.
Yep.
So we set that oven on fire. And the thing there is, well,
there's nothing to grab and pull out.
Exactly. You just have to, like, turn off the oven and try and smother it with whatever you smother it with. You know, I don't even remember what we did. I don't think we had a fire extinguisher, so I'm sure it was, like, I don't know, do you use baking soda? I honestly don't remember what you're supposed to use.
I think baking soda is a fair choice.
I think so, too, and that's kind of my vague memory. Also, in that situation, when it's at the bottom of the oven, you kind of know yeah, there's some grease and stuff down there, but also it's not going to burn indefinitely. It's kind of like, to your point, it does feel kind of like safe and contained within the oven. Versus when it's the top pizza box of a stack of four.
Yeah, you got some risk of it turning into like a pizza candle, you know?
Exactly. Yeah, you have to like isolate the fire and not give it more time to try and do something. So,
well, at least the best part is thankfully nobody panicked and sprayed down all of your pizzas with a fire extinguisher for pretty much no reason.
Yeah, it was about 3 minutes unfortunate. Like a few minutes after the fire was put out and everything was fine. And of course, we put the pizza back into the oven, just without the lid on top, so that it had a little bit more space from the heating element. Lindsay was like, "Yeah, we do have a fire extinguisher, like in this cabinet." Yeah, it was a good time.
That sounds exhilarating.
Yeah, it was. And then we went hunting around trying to figure out like what do they have to clear out any of the smoke and the overall smell. Because having lived in an apartment and previously with my parents a townhome for as long as I have, I'm used to needing to move air to deal with things like smoke alarms because they're all heat-based alarms, not actual smoke alarms. So you just like turn on your oven a little too high for a little too long and enough heat rises and the alarm will start going off. So we have a system of, well, first, learning from my parents, if you're baking at above 425 degrees, you just know, have a cutting board handy to fan at the smoke alarm. To just convince it that it's not actually that hot. Eventually, I have a small, like, just a small tabletop fan that's like, I don't know how big it is. As big as a small cantaloupe, maybe, that can just sit on our TV stand and it points up at the smoke alarm. And if we're baking, I just turn it on and it moves the air enough that it never goes off. But living in a big old house like they live in, they didn't have any of that. So it's like, I guess you just open up the doors, but when it's cold in the winter, that takes a long time to like have an effect. All you really do is just make your feet cold and then push all of that like hot smoky air up towards the ceiling. It's hard to get it to like actually move and dissipate. And even like eventually, like after probably less than an hour, it didn't seem like it was hazy in there anymore. But later that evening, we went downstairs and we watched a movie and then we came back up and like you couldn't see it. But the moment you went up like half the flight of staircase, you were like, oh yeah, it still smells like something happened here. So yeah.
Smells like something happened here. That's an ominous thing.
Well, since it was just cardboard that got set on fire, it mostly smelled like bonfire.
Smelled kind of nice.
Kind of. It's not. I don't think it's really the smell you want permeating your half of your house. But it could be worse, for sure.
Yeah, it could smell like Axe body spray or something.
True. Amen to that.
You know what doesn't smell like Axe body spray? I didn't check the name of the comic before I went with it.
I was going to say, you could have come up with a really natural segue if you'd bothered to try.
If I'd bothered to put in even 5% effort, not even 50% skill, just 5% effort. But if I did have 50% skill, my power bar would have been half full. By Maria Scriven. That was a 10 out of 10 segue, by the way. Faked you out with a bad segue, then hit you with that. Nope, we're not going to say that one. Anyway, so we are set here, Mark, on a, oh, I'm not going to be cheeky with it. We're on a leaf. We're zoomed in real far on a leaf. It's a very businessy looking leaf. Almost kind of maybe professional, almost like an interview or something like that. We got a desk here. We got a butterfly sitting behind that desk. And then in the chair in front of the desk, first of all, weird chair to have in front of a desk. But it's okay. It looks almost more like an exam table. We got a caterpillar, and presumably the caterpillar's briefcase is sitting on the floor next to it. Now I'm thinking about all the logistics a caterpillar carrying a briefcase. But anyway, the butterfly is asking one very important question of this nervous-looking caterpillar, presumably in maybe an interview. And it is saying, "So, where do you see yourself in the next 5 weeks?" Gripping.
I apologize if you did mention this. I honestly don't remember. Did you notice that they're sitting on a leaf?
Yeah.
Okay.
That was the first thing I said, is I'm not going to be cheeky with it. We're set on a leaf. I guess. I said we're set on a leaf, not they're sitting on a leaf. And then I had such a thrilling description afterwards. I give you some leeway here if you forgot, because it was just so thrilling.
I was wooed and awed.
It's like when a movie's so good you don't remember how it started. You know, that's an experience you've had, right? When you see a good movie, you don't remember most of it because it was just so good.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not a sign of a good movie, but... you know,
I like, definitely don't remember how Sharknado begins. I can tell you that much.
Fant Four Stick? I don't remember anything about that movie other than it was amazing. He says sarcastically, speaking about the worst movie he's ever seen.
I saw a very funny meme that was the punchline to the joke was, "I still can't wrap my head around what this trilogy's all about." And it was the movie posters to The Force Awakens, Dark Phoenix, and the live action version of Aladdin, because they all have the exact same style. The color choice, all of it looks like they are from the same trilogy. It was very good.
Yeah. That sounds good.
In this segment of visual jokes that don't work on podcasts. This sub-segment, really, because that's the entire podcast, but... Grant, a few questions for you. First of all, do you ever think about the lack of butterflies these days?
I do not, I'm gonna admit. Is that an ecological problem that's been going on? I just assumed that I wasn't spending as much time outside because my life's not as fun as it used to be.
I am fairly confident that at least when it comes to the monarch, which I have very fond memories of as a small child, that the lack of milkweed available for a lot of reasons has somewhat destroyed the population, at least in Minnesota. Sad. To be fair, I haven't done no research going into this. It's just my, like, hunch that butterflies have been really on the decline. Mm-hmm. And I just remember growing up, there was a time where there were lots of butterflies. There were times in elementary schools where we bred butterflies. Like, we had mm-hmm. caterpillars, and we, like, watched them become, like, go into cocoons and then come out as butterflies and release them in the sort of swampy area around our elementary school. And then at some point, I started realizing, yeah, there's really no butterflies around. Like, even as, like, early as high school. Like, I was outside in high school. There were no butterflies around.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of bums me out, because I feel like butterflies are super cool, and they're very pretty. And I know moths are important, but they freak me the hell out.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of moths. They're too,
too clingy.
Oh, that's not what I was going to say.
Oh.
I feel like I had no problems with most bugs, or what's the more generic term, non-mammal creatures. Inherently, I have a problem with them scaring me, just like I have with mammals. I don't want to be surprised. I feel like moths are one of those things where whenever I see one, it's always, I'm not like, "Oh, yo, look, there's a moth, guys." It's like, boom, moth 2 inches from your face.
Well, the issue with moths is they do that because they're only out at night.
Yeah, it scares the crap out of me.
I agree.
I'm jumpy, dude. I'm about to, like, whip out a can of whoop booty on these things. Can I say that word on the podcast, or does that make more work?
I don't know what you're trying to say.
What word might I not be wanting to say? What one of seven words would fit with whoop and booty? Well,
this is the thing. The way that you strung those two words together to make a compound
didn't make any
word.
Sense.
Yeah, I didn't know what, like, I was trying to piece together what you were saying.
Oh, it definitely didn't necessarily sound like two words combined together either, did it?
No.
Whoop booty.
That being said, I'm fine if you want to use that terminology. I'm not going to bleep it. I don't care.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that sounds like my new crypto coin that I'm starting. Whoop booty.
Yeah, your new altcoin.
Yeah, no, it's not an altcoin. What are you talking about? It's going to become the new standard here.
Hmm. Interesting. It's going to be more prestigious than Garlic Coin?
No, we're not going to talk about cryptocurrencies. Let's talk about something else.
I figured out how to mine CryptoCoin once because Mikhail wanted help learning how to do it. And I happened to have a computer that was like set up to theoretically do it. The issue is that there is... okay, I also won't get into it. Let's suffice it to say that the algorithms that be that allow you to like mine in sort of a cooperative fashion,
mm-hmm.
Were of the opinion that my computer was not good enough for them to let me mine any coins. That's basically what it amounts to.
Oh, what elitist pieces of trash.
That's right. So speaking of butterflies, Grant.
Okay.
Are you a good swimmer?
Depends on your definition of good and swimmer.
I would love to know your definition and then answer the question.
So I would say I am a passable swimmer.
Okay. What does that mean to you?
I'm not about to drown if you drop me in like a pool that is of reasonable size or like a reasonable distance from shore in a small body of water. And by reasonable, I mean a distance in which I could reasonably swim before I drown. Yeah.
Which happens to be...
So very arbitrary distance.
I know. It's like, I don't know how far I can... Like, this is the thing. I literally have no idea how far I can swim.
I don't either.
I don't suspect it's very far.
I don't, like, sink immediately, and I am comfortable enough in water that I'm not going to, like, panic immediately and drown myself. But, like, I also definitely wouldn't, like, say I'm a good swimmer, and I wouldn't, like, go to a pool and swim laps, because I don't understand how to do that.
Yeah, okay.
It just, like, seems like a weird concept to me. And so, I guess that's where I'm at. Like, I'm fine, but I'm not, like, an exceptional swimmer.
I feel like we're on the same page here. I also am a poor... I am at best passable. I think of myself as a poor swimmer just because in comparison to any other like physical activity, swimming is probably my worst or the kind that I'm least comfortable with. It's not like I'm not quote unquote good at lifting weights or anything because I don't do it. But it's not something that stresses me out. But swimming, like actually swimming like out in open water, whether it's a deep pool or like in a part of a lake where I can't touch, mm-hmm. I just am not comfortable with it. I know I can do it. Like I can hang out without needing to touch for a little bit, but they're not muscles that I've exercised. And I also, unlike you and unlike most people I know, I'm not good at like floating on my back or anything. I'm not like particularly good at...
I'm not either. I can't.
Okay. Because when you said you could float, I guess that's how I interpreted that.
Like, I can... I guess float was not exactly honest.
Yeah, you don't sink like a rock.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So maybe... Yeah, so we are probably pretty close, where it's like, I technically learned how to swim a little bit. I think I had very brief swim lessons as a little kid. I don't remember. Like, maybe in late elementary school. My parents took me to some, like, swim school for a little bit. But then it was, like, 7th or 8th grade gym class at West. Mm-hmm. We had a pool. And so, in the winter, you had the swimming unit. I don't remember which grade it was. It was some grade in middle school. Might have been 6th grade, actually, now that I think about it. But we learned, like, front stroke, backstroke, elementary backstroke, and side stroke. And we did all the different things with... like the little boards to help you learn how to kick better and how to tread water and different techniques for that. And you had the people who were swimmers and then you had everybody else. And I was always mm-hmm. extremely bad at it for a couple of key reasons. One key reason for me is that my legs are the strongest part of my body. Mm-hmm. But kicking properly underwater gives me foot cramps.
Hmm.
Like, my feet are inflexible, and whenever I try to, like, let my feet be kind of loose so that they can actually push me through the water, I pretty quickly end up with foot cramps. So that really limits my ability to do a front stroke properly.
I don't get you.
So really, it's like, at least I know that I could hang in like a lake if I needed to, with like the elementary backstroke kind of a thing, and just doing like the little whip kick kind of situation. But yeah, I really don't feel comfortable in like deep water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you want to know my, I don't know if it's my scariest experience in the water ever, because it involves you. It wasn't scary. Oh.
When you visited San Diego?
But it's the experience that taught me, I think, what actually is my best swimming skill is not a swimming skill.
What, avoiding dangerous situations?
No, it is the ability to, like, notice that you're in a dangerous situation and first react by pausing, composing yourself, thinking about what have I been told since I was a little kid I'm supposed to be doing right now, and then doing that thing without freaking out.
It's just like closing the oven on a fire.
Yeah. Like, I'm not freaking out. I'm giving myself time to compose myself so I don't poop my pants.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Do you know that? Remember that?
Well, in general, I don't remember this. Like, if there's a specific moment that you're thinking about, I just know, for the listener, on the last day Grant was in town... he had been in town in like a September in San Diego, and had an uncharacteristically bad weather weekend for visiting. It was really a disappointment. I mean, it ended up, like, we had a good time, but it would have been nice to have nicer weather to have the option. So on the day that he
I don't mean to interrupt the story, yeah. But it is hilarious to me that I'm just learning. Like, I'm sure at the time you said it, but I'm just. Like, I didn't remember it until you've just said it now. I didn't know that the weather was bad. It was so nice compared to where I was.
I suppose, but we had a couple of days where it was, like, threatening rain or just legitimately rainy, and we just, like, hung out inside or whatever.
Okay, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so we didn't go to the beach because the weather did not look promising for any time at the beach the time that you were there. But finally, on Sunday morning, I think you were flying out at like 3 p.m. So we're like, cool, we'll go to the beach at 10 a.m. And we went to like my favorite beach, an area called Solana Beach, which is a lovely area. It has like cliffs all around it. It's beautiful. Except we happened to go there at high tide, which I'd never been there for before. And it turns out, on a immediately after a stormy period time where the wind is up and the tides are up, the water gets extremely chaotic. There was no sense of waves coming in or out. Everything was coming in at weird angles. Like, it was unpredictable. The beach area that I would have expected to have was maybe like 10 feet instead of 40 feet of like depth between where the cliffs are and like where you enter the beach and where the water was coming up.
Yeah.
And I would say that the tide, like when we went out and were screwing around, like, and this is just the case with the ocean in general, but when it's chaotic, it feels worse. When the water level, when you feel like I'm standing still, and in the next 15 seconds, the water's going to go from my ankle to my shoulder. At least that's what it like feels like. Even if it's not actually that bad everywhere, that's kind of what it feels like at times.
Yeah.
So what was your like specific thing?
Okay, I have two things. One isn't the actual thing I was thinking about, but wasn't it like when we first got there, there was like this, not like a rogue wave, but like this wave that was way bigger than all the other ones that washed way further up on the beach than everybody else was expecting.
Almost.
And so people were like,
yeah,
grabbing all their stuff and running back. And I was like, oh, if we'd been here 20 seconds before, all of our stuff would be soaked right now.
I would totally believe that. Yeah.
But no, it's the only time that I think I've legitimately been in a riptide.
Yeah.
When I was there, I had like the boogie board or whatever. And I was just like, oh, I'm like not moving in towards shore. And yeah, I'm like kicking. And I was like, oh, yeah, wait, what am I supposed to do again? And I'm like, oh, yeah,
parallel
yeah.
Parallel to the shore.
No, I just go sideways and then I'll be fine. And nope. I did it and it worked. It worked really well. Yeah. I was kind of surprised that it worked. I was a little bit worried because I didn't believe that it was going to work. And then it did.
You thought it was like the equivalent of like peeing on a jellyfish sting or something like that?
Oh, I was thinking more like, that's not true though. Like, I'm just thinking like in Cars when, they tell Lightning McQueen to like turn into the skid or whatever. And then he just like ends up off the cliff into the ravine, like covered in like prickly bushes.
Oh, sure.
Cause he like literally turned it left into the skid.
Yeah.
Rather than going right with the turn. Yeah. Or
I gotcha.
Whatever direction it is. I don't remember which way that turn goes, but anyways. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good memory though. That was a fun day. Like
it was fun.
I also didn't know that the like water, the waves, or the beach was like not great that day because it was so fun.
Yeah. I mean, again, I'm sure I pointed it out just when we got there, like, oh wow, this is high tide. But it's not like it stopped us from doing anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
reckless young men.
That's right. Aaron and I went back there last year when I was visiting for work and Aaron was able to join me. We were able to take a like half a day and go up to Solana Beach. And the tides there have gotten so screwed up and the shore has receded. So they're very worried about erosion on the cliffs.
Oh.
And you look up at some of those cliffs and it's like, yeah, no, people's houses are like 3 feet from the edge of this cliff. Mm-hmm. Like if something went wrong, it'd go very wrong. So there's this huge project that will be taking place over the next 50 years where they are pumping sand from a river delta to like reclaim the shoreline.
Oh my god.
And we happened to be there when this like huge pipe was just like on the shoreline and then disappearing off way into the distance. Which is how they're like funneling sand. It's crazy. And it's like literally a 50-year project to reclaim the shoreline.
Mm-hmm. I love long-term projects. I'm going to mention one after we finish recording that I think is hilarious in a horrific manner, but...
Speaking of that, Grant brought Non Sequitur by Wiley Miller. We have a young girl sporting a dark shirt with a heart in the middle, and in the middle of the heart is a skull. And she's kind of waving her arms up excitedly, talking to a man who has a sitting at a table wearing like a floral collared shirt, like a Hawaiian shirt. The girl is saying, "I found my calling, Daddy. The wondrous world of accounting." And the man sitting at this table full of papers says, "That's nice, Danae, but I thought you hated math." And the girl says, "Math, schmath, we have technology now to help us specialize in what we do best." And she gives this kind of like crooked smirk, smile look, something over to the father who is looking down at her. Skeptically, let's say. And then he says, "You're talking about shredding an evasion of responsibility, aren't you?" And the girl says, walking away, arms up, "I was born for this era, baby." And she grew up to be Trump's accountant.
I was going to say, Mark, would you agree with the statement that this is a comic from before its time? Yeah. Where it was like... a little bit ahead of the curve here.
Yep. This was an Onion article at some point, and then it became true.
Yeah. Like, I feel like this girl was born to be a crypto shill or something. I don't know. Or to
be, you
can't
shred the blockchain, baby.
Yeah, but...
you just scam a bunch of people. And fair. Then it's on the public record.
Yeah, you also can't shred your history of your old bad tweets.
Mm.
Everything's forever. Nothing dies on the internet. What was I going to bring up with this? There's actually a serious question. Oh, it wasn't a serious question. That's why I forgot what it was. Mark, what makes you happier? Or what do you find more fun in the moment? Not long term, more fun in the moment. Okay? Evading responsibilities or evading stressful situations.
Uh-huh.
Okay, the short-term kind of enjoyment of not dealing with them, even though it might make things worse in the long term. Or shredding things.
Shredding paper, yeah. Definitely shredding.
Yeah?
Easy. We got a shredder when Aaron and I moved in together. I think that was when we got it. And it's great. Love it.
I have a shredder now too, and I love it. It's so fun. It makes me excited to open bad mail.
Yeah, because the thing is, the evasion of responsibility has a dark side to it. No dark side to shredding, man. It's great.
Well,
not okay.
I think maybe you should edit that one out.
For me,
so that it doesn't have to get played at some deposition.
For me personally, Grant.
For me, apparently
nothing to do with my tax documents.
Apparently,
my W-2 is unedited and legitimate, I promise.
Was that it?
I was waiting for you to say anything, so I don't know if it's it.
Are you just talking to the little tax man who's got your wires bugged? God dang it. I didn't say another word, and then I did that. I hate this sometimes.